Let's kick it off, fellas.
Let's do it.
Folks, we are back for part two of the Take the Points Bowl Game Special. I'm Tom. I'm here with Dan from Phoenix, Arizona, and Ryan from the bottom of an avalanche, a snowbank. How were your Christmases,
sir.
Fellas? Ryan, you want to start? You're under like 53 inches of snow right now.
Not too much of the snow here, Tom. Just really, 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 really cold. I was excited. My parents got a new furnace before I came home for Christmas.
That's a major purchase in upstate New York.
It is. I've gone from full sweatsuit and four blankets at night to now I wear just long sleeves and three blankets. Huge improvement.
My parents, they made a huge upgrade. And keep in mind, they did not do this for me. They did this for the baby. They replaced their thermostat with a thermostat where you can actually set to the temperature degree you want, as opposed to this one, which was a dial that you just had to guess where it was. You guys know what I'm talking
slider.
About.
We had the slider. This is the first digital thermostat in this house. It's great.
Yeah, but this one, you know, like a gas meter in a car that was off kilter, the numbers no longer lined up with the actual temperature. So you would set it to like 48 and it would end up 75 degrees in the middle of the night. You're sweating and then you just turn it off and then hope that the cold air doesn't make you like freeze to death. You hope that it's still like, you know, high 50s to low 50s by the time you wake up.
That's fair.
And you wonder why we moved to Arizona.
Rust Belt, like, baby.
Can't deal with this.
Oh, I'm flying back tomorrow. It's going to be 76 on Thursday. I can't wait.
Beautiful day today. Beautiful day.
Good.
Walked outside. Went for a little walk. Mid-70s. Beautiful day.
Well, that didn't answer anything about how our Christmases were, but who cares? We're moving on.
Pretty good.
Last time, a couple weeks ago, we did a bowl game special part one. And we talked about all the non-New Year's Six games, with the exception of a couple that we'll get to shortly. I think we went over like 30 games or something like that. And we have 8 games remaining. The playoff, the rest of the New Year's Six, and then the Outback and the Citrus. So what we're going to do is we're going to power through those 8. And we're each going to give you our takes, opinion, analysis, etc. And let's see if we agree or if we disagree. I've made some changes with my thought process since we originally submitted our bowl pools. So I got some picks that don't exactly line up with what I might have turned in a couple weeks ago.
Mm.
But let's start with a couple easier ones or ones that aren't worthy of that much time, including the Outback Bowl. Michigan versus South Carolina. Michigan, an 8-point favorite for some reason. Over under NFL low 43. That's Steelers-Ravens, Dan. Old Steelers, not the new Steelers. I'll start this one off. South Carolina's 8-4 overall, 5-3 in conference. They're second in the SEC East behind only Georgia. They're an SEC team. They should not be an 8-point underdog to this Michigan team that can't even decide on a quarterback and hasn't really scored much and hasn't looked very impressive all season. So I don't know who will win. I'm sure Jim Harbaugh will find a way to get it done, but I will definitely take those 8 points for sure.
Thank you, Tom. Right off the bat, I'm going to give you 2 traps the week, two locks and 2 totals again this week in only 8 games. Fuck it. Here we go. Right off the bat, South Carolina plus 8.5 is one of the traps of the week. South Carolina finished 8-4, but they blew one game early in September against Kentucky. If they win that game, they're 9-3. They're probably ranked about 18th like they always are. And this game's close to a pick 'em. They're underrated, as you guys remember from them playing against Georgia, only losing by 10. I think Georgia's a much better team than Michigan. I think this game's a coin flip, low-scoring affair. I think it can go either way. I actually think South Carolina's going to win outright. I'll take them in a low-scoring game, 16-13. But as a quick other note, we should probably cherish the Outback Bowl while it lasts. The over under on years of the name Outback Bowl has to be at like 2.5 more. That restaurant will go out of business. I'm going to say under 2.5 years. It was one of the most underperforming ones this year in the whole country. No people our age go to it. It's super expensive. I went to it once this year on a business trip. A steak appetizer, no alcohol, was like, and a tip was like $58. Just want to put that out there. They're going to go out of business. But enjoy the bowl while it lasts at 11 o'clock in the morning. Good time.
Dan, it sounds like what you're saying is millennials are killing Outback Steakhouse.
We are not going. That is correct. I'm not, probably not a millennial. I don't know what I am. But
I've recently been, they keep changing the dates. So for a while, I never thought we were millennials. And then a few years ago, they said 1981. And so we were millennials for a few years. And now they've changed it to like 84. And they say that everyone from 77 to 84 is this buffer generation that they are calling the Xennials or Zennials, which I am not on board with. Like, I'm a staunch believer. You just got to pick a date and cut it off. If you're on one side of the date, you're Gen X. If you're on the other side, you're millennials. If this divides families like the Civil War, that's fine. You do what you got to do. But for now, we're in this middle generation.
Tom, my take on that is, if you attended the Woodstock 99, which most millennials don't even know existed, you cannot be lumped in with those assholes. I was at the Woodstock 99.
You're right. 81.
So absolutely, I will not associate with anyone considered a millennial. I am Gen X.
Now, what happened if you watched it on the illegal black cable box at George Villali's house? Does that count?
Oh, yeah, 100% that counts, because no one even knows what an illegal black box is anymore. We all cherish them as kids. They were the hottest commodity to have. I think it made me a lot of friends when I was young, because we had one too.
We've been to your house many times to watch I think we've gone to your house to watch something on the black box more than we went to your house for all other reasons combined.
Correct.
Like 92% of visits to the Spillett's parents' house were to watch some sort of wrestling or sports thing on the black box.
It was WWF pay-per-views and the 9-second Mike Tyson fight.
That is correct.
That was about it. Okay, real quick, my take on this. Michigan, favored by 8. I don't think they can even score 10 points in this game. So there's just no possible way they should be favored by 8 when I don't think they can even score 10. So if you can find some really tasty shutout prop, I think there's a possibility Harbaugh gets shut out. I think he is this team is that pathetic right now. And I think an SEC defense could potentially shut them out. Also, keep in mind, this is the Clowney Bowl from a few years ago when Clowney made his name known as the number one pick when he de-helmeted a Michigan running back. So this is a get ready for about 12 replays of that hit and enjoy.
All right. Moving along to the Citrus Bowl, also on January the 1st, Notre Dame against LSU. LSU is -3 and the over-under is 51.5. LSU has won 6 out of 7 heading into this bowl, the only loss being to Alabama. Meanwhile, Notre Dame has lost 2 of the last 3, blowout against Miami, and then I don't know if you can call it a blowout. They lost 38-20 to Stanford, but definitely a decisive victory. So I'm just going to go with the hot hand and take LSU in this, lay the points. I think LSU wins by like 4-6. Close game.
I agree, Tom. And also keep in mind, Notre Dame will be missing a couple players via, I don't know, it was a team rules violation. I'm not sure exactly why couple of those Notre Dame players are missing, but they're important guys. I believe one of them's leading them in receiving yards. I'm a little bit fuzzy on the details, but they'll be missing some key players. LSU wants to keep their momentum going into next year. Yada yada. Coach O takes every game serious. He's crazy. Lay it.
Totally agree, Dan. Great point at the end with Coach O. Coach O loves to come up big in these useless games.
Yeah.
The meaningless games, he will absolutely smash people. But when the game's on the line, don't ever trust that barely literate coach. So, yeah, for me, I'm going to stick with LSU.
This podcast is good tonight.
It's going off the rails.
Mm-hmm.
Coach O, I do love when he gets fired up and he turns into the bad guy on True Detective. I don't know if you guys watched that show with the super Cajun dude. I was going to say
he's the Cajun dude from Joe Dirt.
That's good too.
Homeward Hardy.
Yeah, I like the True Detective. My family has lived here for a long time.
Oh, that's him. That is definitely him.
Well done.
No? All right, the New Year's Six. Now the real deal. On the 29th, in just a couple days, we're recording on the 26th, the day after Christmas, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Cotton Bowl. This is, I would say, definitely the best non-playoff bowl matchup. You got number 8 USC, number 5 Ohio State. Both teams are 10-2. Ohio State is a surprising 8-point favorite. We'll get into that in a second. The over-under, 64.5. This game is played at the site of the Ohio State 2014 National Championship victory. First ever playoff year and Ohio State's last national championship. So they got that going for them. You want to take this one first, Dan?
Absolutely, Tom. This is one of my favorite games of the year. This is going to be so fun. The Cotton Bowl is just a historically awesome game. These two teams will each be very motivated to play this game. They have NFL players on both sides of the ball, yada, yada, yada. A couple points I want to make before I give some picks here. We are in a college football, postseason pool with 39 people, and 12 people picked Ohio State as a high confidence pick out of 39. One person in the pool out of 39 picked USC as a high confidence pick. I'm that one person, so I'm super confident now. USC has the best quarterback in college football. The best quarterback in college football should not get more than a touchdown unless they're playing the Clemson or Alabama defense. Last I checked, those guys aren't playing defense in the Cotton Bowl against Sam Darnold. Like, he's going to go up and down the field on this Ohio State defense. He's going to put on a show, and I think he's going pro. I'm not listening to any of the other things. I think this is his last game. So, I'm going to give you a dual rare two-pick-at-once pick here. We're going to go Trap of the Week Part 2, USC plus 8. We're also going to give you total one of the week over 66. So you can go ahead and do the rare take the points hook. I don't think we've called that out yet. But anyway, I really like USC. I think they have the offense to keep up with Ohio State. I don't know about Ohio State's motivation as much as USC. But anyway, there'll be points scored. Give me the best quarterback and all the points. Yada, yada. Hopefully I'm right. We'll see.
I want to throw something out there before Ryan goes. We're recording this. It's about 4 minutes from kickoff of the UCLA game. Mr. Josh Rosen will not be playing in that because he doesn't want to hurt his draft stock. Is there any chance that Sam Darnold follows suit? I know this is a more important game, but what does he have to win from this? If they win, they finish ranked, fifth or sixth? Does it really matter?
No, except he is the opposite kind of personality as Rosen. And people are like already saying that Rosen, is a rich kid, prima donna, yada, yada. Now he's not playing the bowl game. And I think that USC's star, Sam, wants to prove that he isn't like him, and he's more of a Carson Wentz-ish, quarterback, like a man of the people. So he'll show up for this bowl game and he'll play his ass off. Keep in mind, last year's performance against Penn State was just unfucking believable, and I don't think Ohio State's defense is very good. So, points, points, points. USC outright, 42-38. Let's do that.
It could be ironic if Rosen sits out and Darnold plays, and Darnold could either improve his draft stock greatly, or if they lose the game, there's a possibility that Rosen could jump up to that number one pick from sitting out. The funny thing to consider is that the Cleveland Browns have the number one pick. So Darnold can kind of fuck himself over by playing good, for lack of a nicer term.
We'll see.
It's a career killer, that Cleveland.
It is.
Yes. Ryan, go ahead.
And Rosen, well, Rosen, first of all, Rosen did not, he wanted to play. He could not pass the concussion protocol. So that's why he's not playing.
Oh, is that right? Oh, I apologize to Josh Rosen and his hair on the hot tub girls then, because I thought he sat out on purpose.
No, he was cleared to do some light practicing, and he's been practicing this whole time, but he could not get the clearance to play in the game from the concussion protocol. So I still think that Darnold is going to come back to school. I think the stank of Cleveland is too strong. But I like what you guys were saying about the difference in the personalities between the two guys, because Darnold absolutely is a California kid, but he's from like a small farming town of like 8,000 people. Yeah. And it's like 80% migrant workers. So like he comes from like a really small, humble place. So he is very much Carson Wentz. And I agree with that. He's a great kid. I think he goes back. I really do. But despite that, I still think USC covers in this game. I don't know if I could pick them outright, even though they have the elite quarterback. Like we always say, it comes down to quarterback and coaching. And as much as I don't like Urban Meyer, that guy can coach his ass off. And I've been ripping Clay Helton all year for 3 years now. I just don't think he's a good coach. So I think this game's going to be, like Dan said, super high scoring. I think they can cover. I don't know if I would take the outright money line, though.
High scoring flip.
All right. So I don't have a ton of analysis to add, but I will say the Ohio State D line has been a nice unit of growth, or an area of improvement rather, for them this season. When they played Oklahoma in week two, the D line was very young. The whole D was very young. That secondary as well didn't play great. All of them have gotten a hell of a lot better. So I think that Oklahoma game is not something you can really look at to measure this. However, you could look at the Iowa game, and the Iowa game was a blowout, but really the reason they blew them out was because of opportunistic play, especially on defense. So it's all going to come down to can Darnold pick them apart when they do a lot of blitzing and rushing? Can he do quick slants and, you know, get the ball to Jones and other people quickly? Or will the D-line, you know, get in on him and cause him pressure and hurries and things like that? And then on the other side, can the USC defense, you know, play enough, bend but don't break, you know, make a few interceptions, kind of bring out bad JT Barrett as opposed to the good JT Barrett who shows up like once every 7 games. So it's a tough one. It's real tough for me. I, again, lean toward the better coaching. And I pick Ohio State 27, USC 24. But if you're giving me 8 points, Dan, I'm with you. I think I took USC with the points in our bowl pool, and I will sure as hell bet on them with 8 points.
Hell yeah.
Ryan?
One thing to add on this, gamblers. Usually at all these games, we'll have a prop bet of longest touchdown scored in the game, and you're usually somewhere around like the 58 to 62-yard range. This is a great, great, great opportunity to jump in on that. I think there's going to be some 70, 80, maybe even 90-yard touchdown in this game. I could see some crazy one-play drives, like 3 different one-play touchdown drives. So that's a nice little way to make a little extra on the prop side.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Juju will be in the house for sure. Keep that in mind. And he scores long ones. So they'll be like, oh, Juju's here. Oh, look.
I like that. You got Barrett. You got J.K. like Dobbins, guys who can break a run. You got Darnold. You got Jones. I like that a lot. A lot of guys who can make big plays.
Yep.
All right. Speaking of big plays, that's a good segue, because we've got the Fiesta Bowl, 4 p.m. on the 30th. Washington, number 11 versus number 9, Penn State. Penn State, a 2-point favorite, over under 55. Who wants to take this one? I got a lot of thoughts, as per usual, with Penn State. But, Dan, you can go ahead.
I should go. Well, okay. I don't have a lot to say in terms of analysis of this game. The only thing I will say is Penn State came out west last year. They scored a lot of points. Washington and Penn State each had a very good year. Both, you know, had playoff aspirations, fell a little bit short. But I think they come out here. Last year in the Fiesta Bowl, we had a very low-scoring game between Washington and, or sorry, between Clemson and Ohio State. Only 21 points scored. I think there'll be points this year. This is my other total pick. Over 55, Penn State, Washington. But in terms of a pick for the game, I'll leave it up to you guys. I don't have a real strong feel either way.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dan. This is a really tough one. You know, right. I think when this line first came out, I was like, oh, absolutely Penn State. As long as it's under six and a half, I will take Penn State all day. But the Chris Peterson thing really, really makes me nervous. Like, that guy is such a good coach. I think that people will look at their playoff blowout last year and just kind of downgrade him for that. But, you know, it's not like the guy forgot how to coach. It's just Nick Saban's Nick Saban. So that's an impossible task to ask for. So I think that this is definitely is a game that I'm going to stay completely away from. The over-under, I think, you could talk me into both sides. I think team-wise, you could talk me into both sides. But if I have to pick, I guess I'm going to go with Penn State since it has dropped below a field goal. I think just the value is there.
All right. So I'm going to start this one by talking about a different team, which is Oregon. And every year when we're betting these games in the beginning, in part one of our bowl thing, we talk about coaching and coaching changes. And then for some reason, we always talk ourselves into taking the team that we think has more talent, but then has had a coaching change. And we all took Oregon, and they got blown the fuck out because they had no continuity and no coaching. Which brings us to Joe Moorhead. Now, it's not the same as the head coach leaving, but Joe Moorhead called all the plays. He was a really creative and interesting and effective offensive coordinator. He's now gone to Mississippi State. He also has taken Penn State's running back coach with him, the guy who's worked with Saquon all year. And so they've named Ron, I can't pronounce it yet, former QB tight end coach. He's the new offensive coordinator. But he'll take on the new responsibility of calling plays. And, you know, nobody can quite call a game like Joe Moorhead. So I don't know how that's going to go. That to me might be the deciding factor, because when you look at both of these teams, they're very evenly matched. Miles Gaskin, the running back for Washington, he actually has better rushing numbers on the season than Saquon. Very similar stats. His are a little bit better. Now, we could talk about why that is and how Saquon gets keyed up on every single play, but that's besides the point. Washington, also one of their strengths is D-line. And Penn State, as any Penn State fan knows, their weakness for the last like 6 or 7 years has been that offensive line, which has looked okay at times, but looked really bad against Ohio State and other good teams. So Washington has just a huge matchup advantage there. And that's why, much to my chagrin, I'm going to say that Washington gets the early jump on Penn State and is up big. I wrote down 31-14 before Penn State just decides, fuck it, starts throwing it up to Deshaun, Hamilton, and Gesicki. Penn State comes back, but ultimately Washington still holds on and wins 38-35. And then I wrote, Dan, in all caps, take the over.
Okay. All right. I feel good. You are the Penn State expert, so I feel good. And I found out that I have a family member from Pittsburgh flying in with his family for the game in a couple of days, so that'll be interesting.
Yep. And yeah, we might go. We're thinking about it. We're keeping an eye on those ticket prices.
Yeah.
All right. The Orange Bowl.
I'm psyched.
8 p.m.
Worst game.
Yeah.
This game sucks.
Okay, so I was trying to think of a nice setup, but this is the game I'm least interested in of all the New Year's Six games. Number 6, Wisconsin versus number 10, Miami. Wisconsin -6, over under 45. So you've got a game that'll probably be low scoring, not a lot of star players. The Miami defense is fun to watch. Jonathan Taylor is a great player, but I don't know how exciting that Wisconsin run game is as for a casual fan. So what do we do with this game, guys?
If I was the Wisconsin coach, I would say we're going to run the ball on every play. We're not going to throw the ball once. We're going to run as much clock. All I care about is zero turnovers. I don't want to see that fucking chain out. That's all that matters in this bowl game. Like, win or lose, just be like, oh, take that, ABC. You didn't get to see the turnover chain. Like, that's what I would do. But this is a pretty lame game. Not a lot of star power, like you said, Tom. It's a home game for Miami, so I think you have to take them no matter what. But pretty horrible. Not excited about this game.
Yeah, neither offense is very dynamic. There's not going to be a lot of points. I would just kind of stick with the under if you have to do something on this game. You know, Miami, this really is, like you said, Dan, a home game for them at the Orange Bowl. However, I'm going to go with Wisconsin in this game because I think all things equal, they're just the better team. And if it's a coin flip for me, then I'm going to go with a left-handed quarterback every time. So, sorry, right-handers, I'm going with the lefty.
I like Wisconsin's coach, Paul Christ. We've talked about Mark Richt in important games many times. That said, I would take the points with Miami if you're getting 6 points, because if it were flipped, I would take 6 points with Wisconsin, too. I think this will be a close, low-scoring game. Because I don't have any in-depth analysis, because I wasn't interested enough to do the research, I wanted to talk about Jonathan Taylor Thomas of Home Improvement fame for a second. All year we've been trying to come up with a good nickname for Jonathan Taylor, the running back. Of course, you can call him JTT, but that's a little on the nose. And then, you know, what did we say? He should be called like Randy from Home Improvement or Tool Time or something. Nothing really stuck. I believe I said he should be called the Ladybug because I confused Jonathan Brandis with Jonathan Taylor Thomas at one point, which was good. But then last night I was watching The Lion King with my daughter, and I realized this guy should definitely be nicknamed Young Simba. So I'm throwing that out there.
Okay, then.
It fits. It fits his running style, his personality, and of course it is a slightly lesser known Jonathan Taylor Thomas reference. But what I really want to talk about is in this Google rabbit hole I got into looking at Jonathan Taylor Thomas. We all know about his fine work in Home Improvement. However, I'm sure you guys know that Tim Allen has a new show or had a new show, Last Man Standing, recently canceled. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that you guys have probably never seen it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. I had never seen it either. But I have learned that Jonathan Taylor Thomas guest starred on this show. Not surprising. He was in seasons 2 and 3. He came on and he played a character named John Baker. However, here's where it gets good. In season 4 of the show, he guest starred again as a completely different character named Randy.
Rock bottom.
Just oh, man.
Can't find anybody else. They're like, use the same guy. It's the best we can do.
But apparently, I have not seen the episode, but apparently it was just like a straight-up nod to Home Improvement. So I guess when you're writing a season 4 of a Tim Allen show, you're just like, ah, fuck it. Just bring JTT back. He can play a different character. No one's going to notice.
That's pretty good.
I like it.
All right. Moving along. Young Simba. The Peach Bowl. 12:30 p.m. on January 1st. This is our sort of appetizer game to the playoffs. We have number 7 Auburn versus number 12 Central Florida. Auburn is a 9.5-point favorite. The over-under is 67. Dan, you've been the number 1 Auburn fan this year out of all of us, so you can start it off.
Sure. I really like UCF in this game. As you mentioned, Tom, you know, Oregon got absolutely crushed, and they had no head coach. Who else had no coach and got waxed?
SMU.
SMU, that is correct, Tom. No coach and got absolutely crushed. And even 2 nights ago on Christmas Eve, Houston had no offensive coordinator and lost to Fresno State. I'm on the opposite side of that this year, and that's why in the last podcast I was very high confidence on Arizona State because they're keeping all their coaches together for one more round. And the same thing applies here even more strongly. You get Scott Frost staying with all his coaches. You got Auburn that just missed out on a college football playoff, played a bunch of physical SEC games in a row. This game means nothing to them. Auburn's a high candidate not to show up whatsoever. Malzahn just signed a massive extension for 70, whatever, 100, I don't know what the hell he signed. There's no motivation for Auburn whatsoever in this game. UCF has a historic season, Scott Frost, all that good stuff. You're getting 10 points. It's a Florida team. They're going to be all over Auburn. I like UCF outright. But again, yeah, UCF plus the points all day.
Wow, that's a big pick, Dan, and I thought I was going to be the only one picking UCF outright on this.
The coach there.
It is. They love this guy. They knew. They're all realistic. They knew they weren't going to get Scott Frost for their whole career. They knew that this was going to be a short-lived situation. Like you said, there's this zero motivation for Auburn. Even if this was the Peach Bowl against, let's say they were playing Ohio State or Michigan or something like that, Notre Dame, they would absolutely be motivated. But these guys look down on UCF so much and think that this team is so beneath their time and effort that I just cannot see them making any effort in this game. So I'm going to go with UCF outright. And not only that, I'm going to say UCF by 2 touchdowns plus.
Wow.
Look at some props.
Oh yeah, I got a double digit win for UCF to finish the year undefeated.
Wow.
UCF. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Go ahead.
All right. I guess I am going to be the wet blanket of the crew today. So I do think that it's very important that Scott Frost returns and the coaching staff returns. Had he been gone, I think this would be a complete blowout. With him, I think they have a shot, and I certainly would like to see them win. Like, no doubt about who I'll be rooting for in this. I might have even taken UCF with the points in our bowl pool. I can't remember. I think I did. But I'm going to make a different pick here then. So if you saw the South Florida bowl game against Texas Tech, 6-6 Texas Tech, you realize that great Power 5 or great non-Power 5 team is pretty much equivalent with like a mediocre to bottom rung Power 5 team. The talent disparity is just so great. Texas Tech really sort of outplayed South Florida, except for a few key plays that let South Florida win. Anyway, Auburn doesn't just have, Power 5 talent. They have winning the SEC West talent. I don't think UCF can stop Stidham, Kerryon Johnson, that O-line, the defense, if both teams are playing at full strength. And so then the question just becomes about motivation. And this is where I think I disagree with you guys a little bit. So UCF will be super pumped up, no doubt about it. And that's why I think they are going to jump out to an early 7 to 10 point lead, let's say. But what about Auburn? So consistency in the coaching staff, which is what I'm looking for. Also, last game for Jared Stidham, correct?
No,
he's back.
Oh,
is he back? All right, for some reason I thought he was a senior. And then Kerryon Johnson, probably gone?
I will look this up while you continue.
He's probable to play, but I don't know if he'll go pro. He might go pro, but I think
by gone, I mean he goes pro after this.
Third or fourth round pick at best.
All right, I thought Stidham was a senior for some reason, but I guess my point was going to be that these guys going to the NFL and basically playing in their last game in a New Year's Six, still a semi-prominent game, they were going to, turn it up at least for the second half, and I thought Auburn's going to pull away in the second half and win 35-20.
Jared Stidham has 2 more years left of eligibility.
Really? You know what it is?
Because he transferred
and he was so good as a freshman, I think he's just been around forever. He's going to be – so he's definitely going to be like Tanner Mangum-esque in 2 years.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, he played really well in a couple of games this year for sure. That's really impressive. And Kerryon Johnson's a junior. He's back next year too.
All right.
And if they think they can win a title, then he won't go pro. He won't go pro if he thinks they can win a title.
Auburn's gonna be damn good next year with those two back, man. Holy shit!
All right, so I'll keep an eye out on that. But yeah, you guys have convinced me. Then I'm gonna take the points with UCF. I can't give them outright victory.
There we go. We just changed your mind. We're like, no.
You changed. Well, technically, you changed it back because I did pick them in the bowl pool 2 weeks ago. And now I had Auburn by 15 written down, and now I'm going back. So I'm going to say Auburn wins by a touchdown in a pretty close game. Yeah, let's go Knights.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys ready? Can you feel the excitement in the air? The granddaddy of them all. The Rose Bowl. No Big Ten.
So
no
good.
Pac-12. Georgia versus Oklahoma, number 3 versus number 2. The Georgia Bulldogs are a 1.5-point favorite as of earlier today. The over-under is at 60. Let me say before we break down any of these playoff games, of the short history of the playoff, there's never been a playoff where I had so much trouble and I thought any of the four teams could definitely win it all. There are other years, there's always one team that I think, you know, Michigan State ain't winning it all. Or, you know, Jameis Winston is going to have some turnovers at some point. They're not winning this one. But if you told me any of these four teams could win, you can make a case for any of the four, I would totally buy in. So somebody make a case for one of these teams.
I don't want to start.
I'll give it a shot here then, folks. Tom, everything you said was 100% accurate. I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth. This is definitely a four-team tournament that any team could absolutely win. But for me, the big one for this one, I think, comes down to what it always does, coaching quarterback, and then the best player on the field. And I know that, for me, I'm giving Kirby Smart the edge on that. I'm giving Baker Mayfield the edge on quarterback. Now, however, most people would assume the Heisman Trophy winner would be the best player on the field, but they would be wrong, because the best player on the field is also, in my opinion, the best player in all of college football. And that's Roquan Smith.
Hell yeah.
And if you were going to put Roquan in a spy type position where you tell him before the game, your job is to not let Mayfield out of your sight. And if you get the chance, you kill him as hard as humanly possible. I don't care if it's 15 yards. I don't care if they give you 30 yards. Hit him so hard, he will not want to get up again. I think Mayfield's a bit soft. I think he's a bit of an entitled punk bitch. And I think the Georgia defense is going to absolutely tee off on him. If they have to go Vontaze perfect and late hit him as much as they will. They will do everything they can to put the beat on him. And so for me, I think that's what pushes Georgia over the edge. I think Roquan Smith is flat out the best football player in America, bar none position.
All right. I'll take it then. I have the same final outcome, but I got there in a slightly different way. And that is, God, it's so hard for me to pick against Baker Mayfield because he's the best player, or not the best player, but he's the one senior star quarterback out of the four teams in the playoff. And I feel like that gives Oklahoma a huge advantage over every other team in the playoff, that kind of leadership on the field. Meanwhile, Georgia's got a freshman, Clemson's got a freshman, and Jalen Hurts, who we'll talk about in a bit. But I just broke it down, X's and O's. So strength versus strength, and this is the big thing. So you got Mayfield, 4,340 yards passing, 41 TDs on the season. However, Georgia only allowing 158 passing yards per game 271 yards total. Exceptional for college football defense. They have one of the best passing defenses in the nation. And then you talked about Roquan, and the D-line ain't bad either. So I feel like on paper, at least, those two things sort of neutralize each other. Then you've got a strength versus a weakness. Georgia's running attack, Chubb and Michelle combining to average over 170 yards a game. That doesn't even count the other three guys.
Swift and Holyfield.
Yeah. So OU defense, meanwhile, you know, defensive stats can be a little misleading. I'm not a huge believer in like the S&P and those kind of stats, but they are ranked 95th in the S&P, which is not great. I would encourage people to go to SBNation.com. They have a very interesting article about why the Oklahoma defense, despite all the stats and rankings, might actually be good. What they said is they performed well against the five best rushing teams on their schedule and weren't as good against some others. So they play big against big teams.
But they are coached by a Stoops. Continue.
Okay. Lots of injuries in the midseason, and that's when their stats were the worst. And then they've struggled with missed tackles, but apparently the team had a team meeting about this and vowed to give more effort and to improve their tackling. Now, where I'm going with this is they might be right, but until I see it on the field, I don't believe it. So I'm giving the big advantage in rushing game to Georgia. And then coaching and QB. So Ryan, you already talked about this, but QB advantage goes to Oklahoma. I think coaching advantage goes to Georgia because of Kirby Smart in year two. So overall, slight advantage Oklahoma, but that's a little bit of a wash. I have a bunch more notes, but I guess I'll just cut to the chase. This has, and it hurts me, Ryan, it's going to hurt you when I bring this up, but the key for Georgia is Super Bowl 20. Is it Super Bowl 20 when the Giants beat the Bills and had like 48 minutes time of possession and the Bills' high-powered offense was barely on the field? There's no way Kirby Smart hasn't thought of this, and the key to this game is going to be that Georgia running game, just keeping Baker Mayfield on the bench for long periods of time. And then, you know, also eventually punching it in for touchdowns. So that's the key to the game based on history and the last 10 or 12 years of watching college football. And I know that Oklahoma is one of the rare teams that can match up with the SEC, but always got to give the slight lean to the SEC physical dominance. The more experienced coach, the stable of great running backs, Roquan Smith. I don't love this. I hate making a pick either way, but I'm going to say Georgia 27-25 in a close game, a push on the line. So I'm not betting the line at all, and I'm not betting the over under at all, but this will be a game just to watch and enjoy.
Okay. Well, you guys aren't going to like this. I got two locks left, and here's the first one. I love Oklahoma in this game for a bunch of different reasons. First of all, I think Georgia is the most overrated team in the country. And I've kind of been saying that a little bit on and off this year. I don't think they've played anybody the whole year. Outside of Auburn, their best win is against South Carolina in September. Tom, you talked about their amazing pass defense. Just going to run through some of their teams they played in a row here. Appalachian State, Notre Dame, Stanford. Here we go, SEC schedule. Mississippi State, Tennessee, Vandy, Florida, South Carolina, Auburn, Kentucky, Georgia Tech, Auburn. Those teams don't throw the football. Last year, the national title game was last year's national title game was Alabama against Clemson, two South regional teams. The other playoff game this year is Alabama against Clemson, two South regional teams. I'm a little into conspiracy theories always, as you know, with sports, and I think they don't want an all SEC-ish area title game again. They want a team from outside that region. That was the reason why Ohio State made the playoffs last year, and they wanted them to beat Clemson. This year, you got the Heisman Trophy winner playing out west against an SEC team. And if there are any calls to make, Oklahoma will receive them. And Oklahoma is a passing team. And you know, in 2017, refs just love to throw flags on pass interference calls left and right. I think Georgia had a really nice year. I think them winning the SEC title game over Auburn was, you know, just an amazing performance and statement. But I think Auburn was coming off of Alabama. And I think just much like when you played the Seahawks a couple years ago, you come off beating Alabama, you're not winning your very next game. Like, we should have put all the money in the world on Georgia simply for that fact. I don't think Auburn was winning against half the teams in college football almost the following week. And I know that sounds extreme, but I think playing Alabama takes that much out of you. So that all being said, this game taking place on the West Coast, Heisman Trophy winner, ratings, Georgia hasn't really played anyone the whole year. Love Oklahoma. I think they're going to win by 14 plus. They're my first lock of this segment. There we go.
Yeah, the reason this is so difficult for me is because it's not hard to picture Baker Mayfield holding up that championship trophy at the end and, you know, running around and maybe spiking it somewhere and, you know, hitting someone in the back of the head with it, et cetera.
I don't like that guy. And it kills me to be like, oh, whatever. But, like, just from a neutral perspective, I'm like, how do you think this is going to play out? I'm like, I don't see it being Georgia-Alabama or Georgia-Clemson in this national title game. I see Oklahoma and their offense playing against one of the powerhouse other teams. And I think it would set up perfectly because this game takes place first. If you got, you know, the Oklahoma win, and then you go, okay, here we go. It's last year's rematch against the Heisman Trophy winner. Like, it would set up so well for college football to have Oklahoma win this game. And Georgia's got a freshman quarterback, and he'll be back next year, and yada, yada, yada. And we'll see. It's going to be a fucking great game. I think we might be live, so we'll talk about that too.
Yeah, my pick is definitely subject to change throughout the week, but
it's so hard.
We'll go with that now. It's really hard, and it doesn't get easier either, because the last game on our slate, we've got the Sugar Bowl, 8:30 p.m. on New Year's Day, number 4 Alabama versus number 1 Clemson. Alabama, a 3-point favorite, over under 47.
I'll go first if you want.
Yeah, go for it. I mean, it all starts and ends with Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, absolutely. This game's all on him. This is going to be my other lock. I'm going to take Alabama for really two reasons, and more just one reason than anything else. And it's the amazing quarterback that's now on the Houston Texans, Mr. Deshaun Watson. I mean, to beat Alabama, you need to have just like an incredible performance. And I mean, Auburn, you know, had that. Jared Stidham played flawlessly in that game, and they were excellent running the ball. Last year, you had, you know, Watson playing out of his mind, and they had Mike Williams, a guy taken in the top 10 of the NFL draft, a wide receiver. Those guys are not going to be there this, you know, and as well as Kelly Bryant's played, you know, he's not Watson, and Hurts will be there. Saban's going to be ultra. I mean, this is the most motivation Saban has had in a game in years. I mean, he's not only getting a rematch against the national title team that beat him last year, he's coming off an Iron Bowl loss. Like, he's miserable. It's Christmas, and he's not happy. There's no way that guy's thinking about anything else but this football game, and I refuse to believe that Alabama's going to lose this, like, will lose this game. I mean, I know they've had problems with their offensive coordinator and the play calling and yada, yada, but there's a lot of time off between that that Iron Bowl, which was, you know, 2 days after Thanksgiving, and this game takes place on New Year's Day. That's a long time to make adjustments, and I think Alabama is just such an amazing team with the best head coach ever, and I don't see Mr. Watson playing quarterback. So just for that reason alone, I'm going to take Alabama as the other lock, 26-17.
How healthy is Alabama? They've had a lot of injuries toward the end of the year.
Not really, to be honest with you, but again, they're just Alabama, and they have so many players that can plug in. I mean, for me, in these huge playoff games, it's about the quarterback position. It's about skill position players normally. You saw that last year in the playoff. I mean, Clemson played Ohio State. Watson was much better than Ohio State, Alabama, yada, yada. I think the same thing kind of happens this year, but that's why we'll wait and see. It's the best sport.
Well, I'm going to say some things here that are not going to go over well.
He likes Dabo.
I am too, so you can start off.
That's why I went all right. That was fair. I went first this time.
So we all know here, this is well established that rule number one is you don't bet against Alabama. And that's because of Nick Saban. But I'm going to pose this question to you gentlemen. The few Alabama losses that we've seen in the last couple of years, to me, there's one singular theme, and it's not the mobile quarterback that goes through each of those games. And to me, that is Nick Saban's refusal to make adjustments and change his game plan. You have rarely ever seen Nick Saban go, well, the running game's just not really working, or we got to score some more points. We're just going to air it out. We're going to change our style mid-game. We're going to make that adjustment at halftime and just do something different. Oh, we're not getting a Deshaun Watson. Now we're going to all of a sudden change our defense and add a spy. He continues to do what he does. He does not adjust mid-game as much as people think he might. Dabo absolutely does. Dabo came out last year and was like, we're going to try to run the ball. We're going to try to control the clock and possession against Alabama. They got down a little bit early, and they're like, screw this, air it out. Deshaun, no more playbook, just Vince Young this thing. And first of all, Deshaun Watson will not only be at the game, I can promise you he's giving the pregame speech. He's going to give a halftime speech. He's going to be over with the iPad showing Kelly Bryant what looks were there.
You're right.
I guarantee you 100% Deshaun Watson will coach this team up all game and motivate them. He's going to have a big brace on his knee. He's going to be blinged out with his Texans chain. Like, I just think this is a game that absolutely comes down to which team is going to look happier playing the game. And I think Clemson, to me, just looks like they're going to play with more energy and enthusiasm, where Alabama treats this like a business trip and a job. And I just think Dabo is willing to adjust and be flexible. So I'm going to break our biggest rule, and I'm going to break it for the worst reason, as I think Dabo is going to out-coach Nick Saban, and he's going to make adjustments that Nick is too stubborn to make. 24-20 Clemson.
It's possible. Very possible.
All right. I'm going to agree a little bit with each of you. First off, Ryan, shame on you. How dare you insult the dear leader, Nick Saban? You have gone against 5 years of podcast rule. Nick Saban's the greatest. He'll be fine. He'll do what he needs to do and coach as well as he can. Now, there's three things I want to talk about with Alabama, but I'll start with Clemson, actually. So Kelly Bryant has been great this season. He is a freshman, but he hasn't played like one. And we've talked a lot about this year how I don't really know what's going on, but freshman quarterbacks seem to be more prepared, whether it's him or Fromm or other guys across the country. It doesn't seem like there's as much of a learning curve. I think it might be because of high school camps and other training programs and weight training and guys coming in early, but the freshman thing doesn't have the stigma it had even 5 years ago to me. Deshaun Watson said that Kelly Bryant is going to end up being better than he was as a Clemson quarterback. Now, I don't know about that, but if Deshaun says it, you have to at least consider it. I also think Clemson has the best defense in the country, bar none, including other teams in this game. So one thing about Clemson, yes, they lost, and yes, it was to Syracuse, which looks really bad, but you got to remember Bryant was injured for that game. When he's been on the field, nobody's been close. There have been scores that were, 7 points or closer, but the games were always in hand for Clemson. So with him on the field, nobody's really outplayed them the whole season. So I don't count that Syracuse game as much as it does look bad on paper. So Clemson's very good. Now we'll talk about the three things with Alabama. Number one is Jeremy Pruitt off to Tennessee on a fool's errand to try to improve the Tennessee Volunteers. But we remember the last time Alabama lost in the playoff, they were missing a prominent coordinator. Now, nobody's quite as great as Mr. Lane Kiffin, but losing a coordinator for the playoffs, it really does hurt. And I think it's going to have a slight effect. Second thing is the injuries I mentioned. You know, when you don't have your D coordinator and you've got some guys injured, you can't expect Alabama to play up to the super high standard that we've come to expect of them. But the number one reason I'm going to pick Clemson to win this game is because of Jalen Hurts. I don't think he's good. I think he's benefited from being on the best team in America and being surrounded by the best talent, having the best coach. He's obviously a great runner when he gets an open space, but he's never shown me that he can throw the ball well. He has flashes of brilliance, but I don't even think I've seen a complete game against a good team where he's looked great the entire game. Dan, we've talked about this off air, but let's make it official. I don't think Jalen Hurts is going to finish out his senior year at the University of Alabama. You joke about going to FAU, but I do think he's going to be somewhere else.
Who's joking? I'm 100% serious. Lane tweets at Hurts. Lane knows more inside shit than all of us times 1,000. He was offensive coordinator. He knows all the chatter. He knows all the recruiting stuff. He was helping recruiting. Well, what the heck's that guy's name? Tua. The backup.
Yeah, Tua.
I did pick Alabama, but it does scare me that I can totally see Alabama losing so they don't lose in the national title game again, potentially. And this being Hurts' last game, going, you know what? I'm just going to lose here. Call it a day. I'm out of here. Which would make total sense. But this game's unbelievable. I mean, come on. We cannot ask for a better semi ever. I mean, this is as good as it's ever going to get. I don't want to overstate it, but I don't think I can. I mean, you get a rematch in the national title game as the semifinal. Come on. How well did this work out?
Yeah, and whoever wins this will probably be favored in the national championship game.
Yeah, for sure.
I would say by maybe more than a field goal. I would make it 3.5 over
either
for either team. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. So I don't want to make it sound like I think Jalen Hurts completely sucks. When I say he's not good, I guess what I really mean is that he's not the right player for their system. When you look at the guys who have won championships there, they're not necessarily more, definitely not more athletic and maybe not even more talented all around than Jalen Hurts, but they fit what Saban has always wanted to do. And Ryan, you talk about him not making adjustments. I mean, he certainly hasn't adjusted his overall style to fit a running quarterback. He's kind of trying to fit a square peg into a round hole a little bit. So I think Jalen Hurts would probably be better suited at some other school. But who knows what's going to happen. My point is that when he plays the Clemson defense and he's got guys spying him, guys who have the NFL talent to keep up with him, I just think that Clemson finds a way to eke out a very low scoring game. I'm going to say 19-16.
Under sounds good for this one, by the way.
So let me then just reiterate one last time that this is super, super hard, both of these playoff games. So if it was Alabama versus Oklahoma, I can totally see that one too.
And one last thing to add on this, kind of what building off of what you guys were saying with the Lane Kiffin and the coordinators making such a huge difference. Last year, as a true freshman, Jalen Hurts attempted 382 passes on the season. This year, as a veteran, returning starter, sophomore, only threw for 224 attempts. He completed more passes last year as a true freshman than he even attempted this year. So that shows you how much of a difference it makes to have a coordinator like Lane Kiffin, someone with a mind that's willing to take some shots. And I mean, to me, that's crazy that a quarterback returning would throw 160 passes less attempts the following year. So that's just really odd to me. And that, again, that builds on to what I said, that Saban doesn't like to adjust.
And I do think they would have won it all last year had Lane Kiffin still been there. So
me too.
Who knows?
Yep.
We'll see. It's an exciting year and an exciting playoff, and I can't wait. So anything else you guys want to talk about? I've got one topic, but
you guys, we got to pick a champion, don't we?
No.
Nah, we'll be back next week.
Okay, we're going to do a special pod where we're going to do the final and then also do the final in our bracket, right?
Yes, so we have to do the final game. So we have one remaining unaired semifinal matchup between 2009 Alabama versus 2008 Florida in our greatest teams of our life bracket, which we have recorded but not yet released. So that one's been decided. And then we have the championship matchup, which is the winner of that game plays 1995 Nebraska for the championship of the greatest teams of our life. So I'm not going to spoil what happened in that other semifinal game, but the two final teams will get matched up, and that'll be sometime in the next couple weeks. And we'll also have a championship game preview podcast. We could probably do both of those things at once since, you know, you're only breaking down one game. So we'll see. But we'll be back next week at some point.
Awesome. I'm excited.
So I want to talk about Bobby Hurley, Arizona State head basketball coach, fellas, out in your territory.
That's correct.
And yep. This ties back nicely to the sport of football and to Mr. Scott Frost we were talking about earlier. You knew that Scott Frost wasn't long for Central Florida, but it was a great hire nonetheless. I am an alumni of Marist College in Poughkeepsie, New York. In 2004, Marist had a coaching search. Their longtime coach had stepped aside to work in an administrative role. You know, Marist basketball is never good, or nobody really cares. So they just had a longtime coach and they never really won, but they let the guy stay there because they were never really gunning to be great. But then he steps aside and they find themselves in the first coaching search in a long time. And Bobby Hurley announced that he was, quote, interested in the Marist job. Now, he's a player from Duke. He was, I think, 32 or 34 years old at the time. So he was young. He had no head coaching experience. But he's Bobby fucking Hurley, and he has no ties to Marist College whatsoever. The fact that he's interested is great. However, Marist did not hire him because I think because of lack of head coaching experience and because, you know, they thought it was just a stepping stone job for him. Instead, they choose a guy named Matt Brady, who was an assistant at St. Joseph's. Nothing against Brady. He had an okay career. He coached Marist's second greatest basketball player of all time, Jared Jordan. Not even close to the greatest of all time, which is Rick Smits, the Duncan Dutchman. But,
of course.
Anyway, since they hired him, Marist has had four coaches and never been good. Last year, they were 8-24, tied for 10th in their conference. Bobby Hurley now is coach of the number 3 ranked undefeated 12-0 Arizona State Sun Devils. Folks, I know you want your small school and you all want a coach that is going to be great and who's going to stick around forever, but those aren't your options when you're a small school. Your options are you get a rising star and you take the 2 or 3 years and then they move on and hopefully they improve your program and, you know, set things up nicely for the next guy. Or you just go for, you know, okay, mediocre guy, and you just end up mediocre. Again, nothing against the other Marist coaches. They've done fine with the talent they had. Marist was never a good program, but the only way you're going to get from being, you know, what they are to the next level, which is a team that could, like, make a Sweet 16 or make a run, you know, a team like Creighton or
Wichita State.
Yeah. What's the other one? Butler. Like, if you want to be a team like that, you have to take a shot on a rising star. And so this is not just me complaining about my alma mater, but it's for any small school out there. When you're thinking about what coach to hire, go for Scott Frost, go for Lane Kiffin, go for Bobby Hurley.
Very, very well.
Totally agree. Totally agree, Tom. And the little bit I'll add, because I obviously love this hire, and I think you know, he's going to be a great guy there for a couple of years only. He's definitely not going to be long for this ASU job. I think he's going to go back to the East Coast. But all you had to do was just look into a little bit of family background and realize that his father, Bobby Hurley Sr., is considered maybe the greatest high school basketball coach in of all time in America. Head coach at St. Anthony's in New Jersey, played 35 years without their own home gym. They played every game on the road and still put a dozen plus players into the NBA. If anyone needs a great book to read, I highly, highly, highly recommend The Miracle at St. Anthony by Adrian Wojnarowski, who's now considered, you know, the number one NBA guru for ESPN. But before that, he was just a lowly newspaper writer in New Jersey. And he followed this team around and wrote a really, really tremendous book about Bobby Hurley Sr. and that program and how that they've built with nothing. Kids from poverty with no gym, and they've put guys into the pros left and right. So what a fantastic hire, Tom. I couldn't agree more. It's just unfortunate for the Sun Devils that they're not going to be able to keep him very long. And let's one last thing. He's doing all of this without getting any of the top three recruits in the state of Arizona last year. That is pretty impressive that he's done this turnaround without getting any of the top three, who are all ESPN, like top 200 guys, one of which is DeAndre Ayton, who's going to be a top five pick in this year's draft. So that's pretty impressive that he's done all this without getting the top local recruits. I think he'll get them soon, and then he's going to bounce as soon as one of the big East Coast jobs open. My guess is once the stink of the scandal gets off of Louisville, that is the absolute perfect spot for him to end up, and he can just take that job and take it for the next 20 years. And I think he wins a title if he goes to a place like Louisville.
And it's all relative, right? Because for many coaches, Arizona State would be your final landing spot, your final destination. For him, it might be a stepping stone, but Arizona State hasn't been great in recent years. And well, not, you know, I don't know. You guys know better than I have, but at least the last few years, they haven't been great. And now when if he does leave in a couple of years, they're going to be in a better position to hire a better coach next time. It just raises the whole program. And whether you're Arizona State or you're Marist College or you're Central Florida, think about the next Central Florida coaching position. You know, they're going to have they've already made the choice, but you know, they had a better crop of people to work with than they otherwise would have. So I would recommend this in all facets of life. Like, it doesn't even have to be sports. Like, if you're hiring someone to work for you, look for the person on the way up as opposed to the person who's sort of settled into that role.
Well said. Good job. That's a good way to end. I like that.
Yeah. Anything else? I feel like ending on a serious note after we've been stupid and inappropriate, it's almost not right.
No, cancel that. I got two things. each from the Alabama-Clemson game, one story for each school that'll prove how cool each are. The first is from Alabama. How about Landon Collins today calling out Eli Apple for being a team cancer on the New York Giants? You like that? Just flat out going, yeah, that Ohio State guy, team cancer. So once again, Alabama, thumbs up, Ohio State down. The second good story today is that Clemson and Ohio State were both recruiting the same five-star player who signed with Clemson. And they're like, why did you sign with Clemson? He's like, well, coach told me that Urban Meyer, he's going to retire soon, so don't worry about him. Which we've been saying here on Take the Points, which is very accurate. Mm-hmm. And I believe that, once again, Alabama and Clemson, super cool team. So fuck you, Ohio State. Fuck you all the way.
It's hilarious because they're only 5 years difference in age. Yeah. Urban Meyer and Dabo. But Urban Meyer has had, you know, a couple of quote unquote health scares.
Yep.
And Dabo still runs like 6 miles a day and you know, high fives every guy. He's just the greatest. So sorry, Nick Saban, you're going to have to join the graveyard for a second time.
We'll see.
And if you don't know what we're referring to, folks, Clemson has actually built a graveyard on campus and they put headstones of all the teams that they murder. So go ahead and Google search that. That's hilarious.
I'm not as confident as you are. Dan, you want to end by talking about Texas? We talked about this a few days ago.
What about it?
Best defensive back recruiting class of all time. Oh. Number three recruiting class of the year.
Yeah.
Watch out, folks.
RUT Horns are going to be just fine. First of all, if you haven't made a wager yet on that Missouri-Texas game, I've done a lot of research, and what a lot of people are saying is Missouri will not be able to move the ball on this amazing Texas D-line that they got. Anyway, let's talk about recruiting. Over the past, 8 to 10 years, Texas has lost a lot of in-state talent to other schools, some in the state of Texas, some to outside of Texas. This year, our boy, Mr. Herman, kicked ass. He locked up the top five players in the state of Texas. And if you look back from the last, 8, 10 years of who those top five players are, at least one of those top five is a flat-out superstar in the NFL, like is an NFL player. So they're getting someone really good to begin with.
And yeah, secondly, I mean, this is the best players in the best football state in America at, one of the speediest, most skilled positions. These are the best of the best.
And then they're the first college football team in history to sign what the hell is it? First team to sign six corners in the top 25 ranked in their position ever. Florida did it once and they signed five, but they got six, which makes total sense when you play in the Big 12 and have to play Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and TCU and Texas Tech. I'm so excited for Texas. They're just going to get better and better. It's on. They're going to be a power again very soon. Everyone should just jump on board now. There's so much room. You never get a chance like this. Just jump on board.
It's rare you can jump on a bandwagon of a huge national powerhouse and it doesn't seem like you're just, completely bandwagon jumping because they've been down for a few years.
Get on board. It's going up. I'll tell you that much.
Texas, 2019 national champions. 2019 season, 2020 game.
2020 Texans, Houston Texans with Deshaun Watson and Hopkins and Watt. And 2020 Texas Longhorns. I mean, Ryan, we were talking about that the other day. So anyway,
sweep. I like it.
The Texas two-step.
Great job by UT Horns. Look, very excited. And happy new year to everybody. See you in 2018.
Just saw that the Iowa State quarterback's going to be out now, too.
Which one? I mean, they've been on their, third or fourth stringer all
year. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. Okay. I thought Park was the guy they've been playing.
He's the guy who kind of looks like Nick Cage, who played earlier in the year, but's been out since, week two. He was the guy who we were sending photos of Con Air when they were playing Iowa in the overtime game.
That's right.
I got that. Con Air memory. Anything that relates to Con Air, I still, I'm like, I got tabs. Take the point.